Okay. Everybody here now?
Yep.
Okay. I think that worked. That was the hardest part of my job today. And hopefully it asks you to restart recording. Okay, I guess we'll start out today's call with announcements.
Could we just have a reminder of everyone who's on the call? Because I feel like a couple of people joined, but I didn't really catch everyone who's there. And since there's so few of us, it'd be nice to know.
Yep. This is Jason Cervenek at Ohio State, and I'm moderating for Tamara today.
Great. Well, I'm Minda Burbeco at the National Center for Science Education.
I'm Kate Heffernan at NCSE as well.
Is there anyone else on the call?
Okay, it could just be the three
like
of us.
Three of them.
It's funny, I thought I heard other people come in, but I guess not. I don't think we have any announcements. Kate, do you have anything to talk about in particular, any announcements?
Honestly, no.
Okay.
There weren't too many developments last week.
Yeah, it's pretty quiet in the summer.
Yeah, we're in the kind of the same mode. We have three workshops this summer, so we're getting geared up for our first one, which is kind of Cryosphere Deep Time workshop for educators that starts next week. And then we have another one on the argumentative writing in July. And a GIS workshop we decided to run that's been very, very popular with a lot of people outside the community. So I guess our summer's geared up to preparing for those right now at Ohio State.
Are those online or are those for local teachers?
For local teachers, although there's the GIS one's almost exclusively local. The Cryosphere Deep Time one is for anyone across the state. Our Board of Regents fund those workshops, and we have a few people from outside the city coming in for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one, the argumentative writing, is open up to anyone nationally. And we have, I think right now, 5 teachers coming in for that.
Oh, so they physically fly in?
Yes, yes.
Gotcha.
That might be one of the future we could do online, but it'd have to take some re-envisioning. We're still kind of in a field test of that workshop.
Sure. How do you guys, is it argumentation and climate change, or is it argumentation more generally?
Argumentative writing, it's science, English, and social studies, so we're hitting
mm-hmm.
the major ideas of claim, evidence, warrant, backing,
mm-hmm.
how to construct those and evaluate the arguments, but the beautiful thing is you find out the application to all disciplines is there,
mm-hmm.
and so for us it's been nice starting out really when we began it was 2 English teachers that were helping us think about how to do this in science. And then our archival program got on board because a lot of the primary sources in our archives related to the Bird papers,
mm-hmm.
Richard Bird. And from there, it kind of took off, and it was been very organic. Everything's just kind of naturally flowed out of those discussions. So I think maybe in a year or two, we might be able to do something online with it. We're not quite
That's
there
neat.
Yet.
Well, I was going to say, if there's anything climate change related, which it sounds like it is, if you could forward it to me, because we could let our teachers know in Ohio at the very
yeah.
least about it, and you know promote it for you guys and stuff like that.
Yeah, actually, I'll send you a copy as soon as we get done.
That'd be great. Yeah, I know the argumentation piece is really I found it really tricky, just because I think you know very surface level. Teachers are like, argumentation, great, like climate change doesn't exist. That's a perfect argument.
Yeah.
So, like, kind of teaching them, no, like, argumentation, like, here's the science, and, like, how do you build argumentation using the science and stuff like that. So,
one of the harder pieces to that is we constructed one activity last year with having people peruse different sources.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, students, even at the upper grades at a school, they've been very well prepared, don't have the toolkit to assess
mm-hmm.
quality of a source or to even know how the scientific process works. So if you ask them to sift through documents, they can superficially say these two documents are of equal weight.
Yeah.
But they can't. And I have some very interesting stuff we had as we had them looking at denial literature versus
uh-huh.
the IPCC report, and
yeah.
they rank both as very scientific on the
mm-hmm.
surface,
mm-hmm.
but they couldn't. They weren't able to, without coaching, to delve deeper than that.
Okay.
Which I think that's really it's something you can't do in 2 hours. You need more time.
Uh-huh.
It taught us it has a lot of traction, but it needs to be studied a lot more.
That's interesting. The comparison, did you use the NIPCC report? Was that the comparison one? Interesting. And do you feel like
they were very interested in the appendix.
Okay.
Because they looked at the bibliographies and somehow that spoke to them.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not sure if it's because the length of it is just so different or they're accustomed to writing one to see something with 700 authors on it.
Yeah.
That actually entertained a lot more discussion than the rest of it did. We
uh-huh.
also sent in one from The Onion, which was interesting because some of them don't know The Onion's a satirical
uh-huh.
document. So some students said it had no weight, and others thought it had some weight.
Uh-huh.
But that was another. There's a few documents in there you find are very robust as uh-huh. platforms for conversation.
Are these pre-service teachers, or are these
high school students?
Oh, these are high school students.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So we're gonna use this again this summer, this case, and see if we want to know how teachers respond to it.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of one of those multi-year roll it out in certain audience to certain audiences and see what the discussion is that unfolds.
Uh-huh. That's
really
interesting.
I can send you the link to the stuff together. A lot of everything's publicly available.
Okay.
But I just have a folder where we've curated that. And it's actually been kind of a collaborative venture of a few of the researchers here that teach classes, mm-hmm. trying to have similar conversations in their classes.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that it's more important that students understand how to vet the quality of a source than anything else, because it doesn't matter what field they go into, they're going to have to do some curating of materials and knowing how to rank and sort things based on quality and also credibility.
So in the case of the NIPCC report, right, so it does have citations, mm-hmm. how do you work through with the students, like, what makes a good resource and what makes a bad resource and how you can really tell them apart?
So we had we didn't get to go into as much time as we thought we would because of all the standardized testing this year and our snow kind of destroyed.
Okay.
We were supposed to have 3 days before we ended up with 1.5 almost.
Shoot.
Yeah. First, the number of times certain authors appeared on it. So it's the same authors kind of over and over again in each chapter. So that was interesting, like, why would you do that? And we uh-huh. talked a bit about how things can masquerade as things that they're not. So the Monty Python discussion of the woman being a witch and how you have this really, what seems superficially to be a very credible claim with some evidence, your warranting is all wrong.
Yeah.
And then got to discussion of peer review. And
uh-huh.
I think many of them, that's where I realized pretty quickly that they really don't have a sense of what that is. So to them, science would be the same as Time Magazine. They're both documents. They're both printed weekly.
Right.
They're both soft cover. But they don't understand something that's curated by an editor versus a body of people in the same field with
mm-hmm.
the same level of expertise.
Mm-hmm.
And you can have that conversation, but I'm not really sure it sinks in.
Yeah.
Or even, you know, if a government report that comes out, something that coming from EPA would look the same as something coming from the national academies.
Uh-huh.
And even the peer review process is there, it's a little different in both venues.
Mm-hmm.
So what it taught us is there's a lot more conversation to be had there,
mm-hmm.
but there wasn't enough time to have it.
Yeah. That's interesting.
It was a great way to learn more about how the students were thinking and a way
uh-huh.
to start unpacking what I think is like the black box of science where most of the public doesn't know what it looks like behind the scenes. So they kind of draw, since they don't know, they just draw their own conclusions or they go with whatever information someone else gives them.
Mm-hmm.
Versus having the scientific community say, well, this is what it looks like behind the scenes.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
All right, this is useful. Yeah, I mean, it's useful information, particularly with argumentation starting to come out with the Common Core. It's going to be interesting to see how teachers try to integrate this stuff in. So I'll be curious to see how the teachers respond to the same kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep some notes. We're going to probably videotape some of it this year, maybe just blind out faces, but try to capture more on video of the conversation that ensues.
Do you think you'd be able to come back and present it at a future clean call?
That's our goal, yeah.
That'd be great.
To do that. We'd like to scale up the workshops.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think when we started this year and a half ago, we really knew what it would lead to, but it's been so fluid and it's been so easy. I mean, it's because the collaborators we're working with, they're just because all of us had these epiphany moments of there really is this much overlap. And I think as a former teacher, there's so many times I was coerced into coming up with overlapping lessons that overlap or units that unify ideas. And we realized this was just one area where there's so much consensus. And the superficial stuff, the tools are different, but everybody's building claims with evidence. Everybody has to have warrants that are accepted practices or knowledge in their field. It's the same process, just with a different variation.
Great.
So, yeah.
Cool.
Any other things going on this week? There's no speaker for today, I guess, so it's just a chance for us to update if there's anything else going on in your neck of the woods or programs.
Yeah, not really. It's so quiet here now that the summer hits, which is nice because we can, get ready for the fall. We're going to do a large-scale campaign. I don't know if Kate mentioned this last week, but we're working on a large-scale campaign this fall that we're going to try to co-brand with NABT to try to get teachers to find out more about what we do at NCSE and support them better when they're dealing with teaching about climate change and evolution. So that's kind of our big focus right now, is sort of setting things up for the fall. And I'm going to the National Education Association meeting in about 2 weeks, which is a little bit outside of the climate change issue. Every year, are you familiar with the National Education Association? They're the big teacher union. Oh, there we go. Yeah. Did you ever go to any of their meetings?
I didn't actually, no.
Yeah. So interestingly, at their meetings, they have these like this expo, which is just sort of the exhibit hall. But for, the past 5 years or so, creationists have been going there and setting up booths and giving out lots and lots of creationist materials to teachers to teach in their classroom, which teachers actually do. They're going to get in some big trouble because it's actually unconstitutional to teach creationism in your science classroom, interestingly enough. So we've been going, and we're bringing NABT this year, and I think we're going to also try the science folks over at NEA are trying to bring in a couple other science organizations to help sort of bring in more science material. Fortunately, there hasn't been any climate change deniers have shown up there yet.
Yes.
So that's good. So our focus is really going to be more on evolution and nature of science stuff. But that's kind of our big conference this summer that we're going to, and that's about it for us. Except for just all this preparation. The other thing that I wanted to talk about, but maybe I should hold off for another call when other folks are here, is just the National Climate Assessment. They're starting to work on the next round, and there were like a lot of folks from the Clean Network that were involved in trying to come up with the learning pathways. And so I was going to talk to Emily Cloyd either this week or next week, just to see if we can get involved earlier on in the process. And I don't know if that's even a possibility, but I do know that so many people were just really kind of annoyed that education was really left out of the process. And so I thought it would be worthwhile to have a conversation with folks to see if we can kind of be included, if people want to try to be included early on.
No, I think that's actually a good idea, because when we started a discussion locally about our city climate assessment, nice, because I kind of used a similar reasoning that it was important for us to think about what that document looked like and how we are going to disseminate it to people and make sure it got into the average person's hands up front.
Yeah.
And I think if we're also going in with a kind of a strong discussion of the outreach and education needs to be foremost in creating this product, then maybe it's easier to look for some different foundations that might think about creation of materials, supporting documents, videos, little exhibits that can travel, other stuff that would make sharing that message easier.
That's a great idea. I guess that's the question, is that what we would want, or what do we want?
And the wonderful step forward about this document the third version was, it was kind of web native with all these interactives available. They got one sheets or the two-page sheets that I can run out and give out. Every event we go to, we give them out now. We
direct
information. So we've probably given out 500 or 600 of those or more over the last year. Because everything we go to, we had a legislator in here yesterday, and that's the thing we pointed him to. Was
so you handed him like the printout, or what did you give? What specifically did you give?
We give the Midwest two-page summary.
Okay.
But that's been our go-to place for graphics for him. I mean, that's almost the first place we steer people now. Is they say, what does this mean for us, or what's the data look like? Is it's well, if you want to know what it looks like for your local neighborhood, here's the information. Here's the best that science can provide you.
So my question is for the educational community, because the document's really great. It's very user-friendly, and I've used it with educators, and they're like, oh, this is awesome. It's way better than the IPCC report in terms of its usability. But I guess the question is, like, is that enough? Can we just bring that back to educators again? Or is there something unique about the educational community that really is important that we try to get involved really early on in the process, because it was really missing from this document this time around.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any thoughts about that?
It depends. I think the way they set it up, if the document's set up to be very user-friendly, are there special mm-hmm. features that allow a younger audience to engage with it? Or
does
it make it easier for teachers to build in learning experiences? And if they can do that, it's more meaningful.
Okay.
I know for us, we tried to customize a lot of stuff from it that was pretty straightforward, but I can't say that every teacher looking at it would have the time to do that. So we give students, you know, 5 or 6 of them and say, so what is some similar, in your region you're given, what are the biggest concerns you'd have and why? And then talk about how those regions were based around the country. Different people had different needs. So coastal flooding is not an issue in Ohio.
Right.
But it's going to be an issue in Seaboard.
Uh-huh.
It seems really obvious, but students, without thinking of geography, don't consider the fact that the country is any different than the place they live.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems obvious since all of us have traveled, but, you know, you get some younger students in Columbus that have never left the city. They maybe seen a beach up at the reservoir, but there's no tides there.
Right.
So what do you mean if the water goes up a foot? Why would that matter?
Right.
I don't live near water. Nobody has houses near water.
So why do I care? Yeah.
So it's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing was the video clips. So for a lot of audiences that didn't want to read over the documents, that if you wanted a very concise version of what it meant for one facet, floods, fires, whatever, those mm-hmm. videos I thought were very powerful as snapshots and ways to access the data, at least.
You mean the videos in which they sort of showcase different parts, like the fire one and the sort of ocean acidification, those ones?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Interesting.
And even all the way down to, you know, some of the social media stuff, if they really want, if that document's about getting the information out, having that plan in place so as it rolls out for the first 2 months, there's mm-hmm. all the social media tools and everything. We would already have stuff pre-written with photos there that we could all populate or share. But I think mm-hmm. even having that all in place would make sure that it really gets high priority in social media out the door.
Okay.
Videos, the multimedia stuff, at least provides the ability to captivate. And I think if we consider educational audiences more than just schools, our metro parks here, we have a few naturalists that are really engaged. And if we think about the audience they have, it's an informal setting, but you have families that are there, and these are people that the parents might never be in a school, but they're going to get the story of what climate change could mean for our local park system via that naturalist-led program they participate in. So I think that's also an audience. The informal educators are something we want to consider when we're trying to put these things in place. What does this mean for parklands?
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay, that's great. That's good.
I think it's a great idea to get in the conversation earlier.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to chat with Emily later this week, and then I think, you know, in over the summer maybe we can have more conversations about it in the Clean Network. It's interesting because it's not exactly in line with what NCSC does, so it's hard for me to kind of internally push it, because it's really sort of different from what our goals are. But it is a really useful document for the types of things that we do, and certainly, like, trying to pull it into education is really very useful. So I think I'm going to just, you know, see if people are interested and see who wants to kind of run with it, and then sort of maybe push it off in their direction if that's something that they're interested in. But I definitely didn't want it to get dropped, because I think it's such a great document and it's so useful.
Yeah.
And if we can get involved earlier, the challenge I think we had this time was that, you know, we got involved really late, and then all the stuff we put together for it just didn't really get used. And so if we can get involved earlier and have a more concrete plan from the beginning, I think it might be useful.
We're even thinking about our farm science review that the state of Ohio has about, I think it's 125,000 people that visited over 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're setting up a display there this year to talk about the work of the center. And the state climatologist for Ohio will soon be based out of our center. Also
mm-hmm.
a geography professor. But we're using that document as the big graphics we're trying to communicate. So our display is going to be more than half national climate assessment taken from that document, and using those large visuals as ways to talk about the changes.
Mm-hmm.
Then we're trying to create a display with an interactive TV screen that would let people go ahead and peruse some of the content on that site, with maybe some tabs at the top we're going to build in so we can show other things. There's some good atmospheric visualizers we've been using, but we want to have all this stuff on standby so it draws people in. But then if we want to show something, we can show people something that they're asking about.
Okay.
So I'll tell you how that works after September when we've given it our first run through, but that's our plan right now.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how your summer workshops go. How everything goes, because I think there'll be some interesting information coming out of it. So, cool. Well, that's it for me. Do you have anything else that we should talk about, or do you think we could end a little bit early, maybe?
Yeah, I think that's all that's on my docket. Our other big thing we're watching is the encyclical coming down from the Vatican on Thursday, because one of our researchers was served on a second committee.
Oh,
there's been all this
cool
buzz, different spaces about what that document will say, and been interesting watching the news reports on it. So
great,
kind of intrigued
really
to see what
exciting.
Happens on Thursday.
Yeah, cool. All right, we'll keep an eye on it.
Okay, well, have a good week.
Yeah, talk to you later. Bye.
Take care. Bye.